Sports USA presents Classic Conversations with Joe Morgan, featuring some of Joe's greatest interviews with entertainment icons, Hall of Famers, and champions. Now, Classic Conversations with Joe Morgan on Sports USA.
Welcome back to the Joe Morgan Show. I have the distinct honor today of talking to a guy that I've admired for such a long time, and he is just one of the truly great, great guys in the world of sports and one of the greatest players in the history of the NBA. A lot of people call him Dr. J. Most of his friends call him Julius, and I'm speaking of Julius Irving from the Philadelphia 76ers. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good. Have you been working on that, man, with that Irving thing?
No, but I just, the thing that I remember the most, I was fortunate, you know, even before I knew you, I came to a game in Philadelphia. We're actually playing across the street. I was with the Giants. We were playing the Phillies, and we got rained out, and you guys were in a playoff with Milwaukee, and we came over, and some kind of way we got in. And I got a chance to watch one of those playoff games. And then we went downtown and we saw you, you know, you and Bob Lanier, who was a friend of mine for a long period of time. We went out afterwards and, you know, had a beverage or two. So that was the thing that struck me, is the way that they announced you in the Spectrum that night.
Well, you know, they used to pay homage. And I don't think you happened to get in. I think you got in because you were a superstar in your sport, a great guy. And Philly is a baseball town. There's no question about it. And if you went to one of the Milwaukee Bucks, Philadelphia 76er playoff games back then, it was an absolute war.
Right.
I mean, you know, and Bob was pivotal to everything that they did that was successful. And we used to always squeak by Milwaukee, and I always felt that that was always the toughest matchup for us in the playoffs, the Sixers and Milwaukee. We beat each other up. And then get served up to the next opponent, which was likely to be Boston most of the time. So I remember those days very, very well. And, you know, in terms of thinking about things, Joe, you know, I know you've gone to many All-Star weekends, and, you know, meeting you there with your family and spending a little bit of time together has, I think, laid the foundation for this friendship. So I'm happy to be on your show and happy to be talking to you right now.
Well, and I want to say one other thing. I've spoken to a lot of other NBA players and on the show and so forth. And I mean this. They speak of you with reverence. And it's like when we talk about a class act, we know who Dr. J is. He's a class act, et cetera. But it's always interesting to me that when you're a fierce competitor, as I know you were and are, we just talked about you on the golf course, it's interesting because a lot of times people do not like you. But I have never run into anyone that did not like you. The other guy that I think of in those terms was Willie Stargell. I've never heard a bad word about Julius Irving, Dr. J, from any other NBA player or from any other baseball player to ever hear anything about Willie Stargell. And I just don't, I want to say that because you're such a competitor. You know, like people didn't like Pete Rose because, you know, they look at him and he was such a fierce competitor and a lot of people didn't like him and they held that against him, but they don't seem to hold that against you, Julius.
Yeah. And if I could chime in on it, I think there was an on-court persona for me that was just, you know, the whole nickname of Dr. J and operating on people and all that kind of stuff. Had to do with once you got within the black lines, you know, it was almost like there was another individual there who wanted to compete, wanted to win, and wanted to, you know, be as good as I could possibly be. But off the court, I mean, I really wanted to, you know, I wanted to be a good citizen. I wanted to represent my family well, and I wanted to, you know, I introduced myself as Julius. I never introduced myself as Doc or Dr. J. I mean, I accept it, and we, you know, we play with the nickname, and it's relevant. And I'm kind of fortunate that, you know, 27 years after playing my last game, it's still you know, relevant.
It's still relevant.
That's a good thing, but it's not my calling card, and that part of my life, you know, I'm far removed from it as you are. But you know, the platform that was created is, you know, worthy of staying connected to.
Yeah.
And the good things about it, you want to stay connected to, and those tough nights and those headaches and those losses is something you want to forget.
And most people may not remember the, you know, ABA, American Basketball Association, with the red and white ball. It doesn't seem like that long ago to me and you, but some of the young kids today never saw that red and white and blue ball. So it's kind of interesting. And you're the only player in the history of professional basketball to be the MVP in both the ABA and the NBA. Let's go back and talk about the beginning, though. When you're a kid, were you always just a basketball player?
Well, let me correct you on that, because Rick Barry was
MVP. You're right.
and an NBA MVP, and he was an NBA champion.
You're right.
I think I might be one of the few players to win championships in both leagues.
Right.
The scoring titles, you know, that sort of thing. There's some statistics there that exists, but I don't think I'm alone in terms of it. I think Rick is out there as well. And I was on the phone with him yesterday, Joe. So
yeah, it's interesting. What's interesting, Rick Barry.
It's only me and not him. You'd be blowing up my phone and yours.
And me, because I should know better because, you know, Rick played for the Oakland Oaks here.
Right,
he was
AB, right.
And then for the Warriors. And I should have known. He was. I always admired Rick too, because he could put it in the hoop, you know. So, but I have to tell you, my research paper here said that you were the only one. So that's where the mistake came in.
Yeah, we go back. You go back to them and see if they're right or not.
Yeah,
but not a biggie. That was, you know, it's nice to talk about the past and think about it. And in those years, I mean, I played over there for 5 years.
Right.
And played the NBA for 11 years. So, you know, I think my career was very unique. And I don't think I would have wanted it to be any other way.
Yeah. Well, I think that's interesting because a lot of times, you know, people say, well, if you go back, is there one thing you would change or whatever about your professional career as a baseball player? I got traded a few times. I played for a lot of different teams. I don't think there's anything I would do differently. I was just fortunate enough, like you say, to be with the right people at the right time. When you go back, you know, to your career, you know, with the Sixers, you know, you and Moses Malone, when Moses came, you guys were the cream of the crop.
Yeah. We had a wonderful year in 1983. If I were going to look at and assess the whole thing, I might have been a little more selfish when I came over from the ABA. You know, I mean, I was an excellent scorer, an excellent rebounder. And, you know, I think when I signed with the team because of the cast that was there and some of the sensitivity of the egos of players, you know, our general manager said, well, we don't need a guy. We got you. We want you to be, you know, who you are, but we don't need a guy who scores 30 points a game and, you know, so on and so forth. So I said, okay, you know, what do you need me for? I said, well, I need you to play this role right here. And we got Doug Collins, we got George McGinnis, and we got Darryl Dawkins, and, you know, and guys who are already established here. So just don't ruffle the feathers, you know. And I'm like, okay, let me come in and do my job, but then I'm not supposed to, you know, hurt anybody's feelings if I'm playing better than they are. So I was supposed to be a peer as opposed to, you know, a person who was deferred to. So I came in and suddenly become a 20-point scorer instead of a 28-point scorer, and I'm taking 15 shots a game instead of 25. So I would have been more selfish if I knew what I knew now.
But, good point.
Yeah, if I knew what I knew now, but I didn't know it. I didn't know it. I was 26 years old, and I was like, okay, I'd already played on two championship teams in the ABA and really established myself as a pro. Now I need to establish myself as a Philadelphia 76er and be a part of the organization long term, and that was the plan. And we actually had a very, very successful year. We had balanced scoring. You know, we had our defense was all right, but it wasn't the greatest. And a lot of people were happy until we got to the finals against Portland because, you know, we had the best record in the league that first year I got there, and things seemed to be working, and we were on course to win a championship until we got to Portland when we won the first two and then suddenly lost four games in a row. And next thing you know, we were chasing the title after that instead of having one put in the bag.
Well, that's interesting because the NBA TV now shows a lot of those old classics. Mm-hmm. And I watched that series because I was a big fan of yours and the 76ers, and you'd won the first two games. I said, well, here we go. And then all of a sudden, like you say, you lost four. And that's made that team, meaning Portland, famous because, you know, it kind of put Bill Walton on the map and this and that and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, they got so much out of that.
Yes.
But lasting to this day, and they have a great franchise, and they've been accomplished. They haven't won the championship since that time.
No.
But, you know, they've had some great players. Clyde Drexler was a phenomenal player for them. As with Terry Porter and Maurice Lucas. So I always admired that franchise, but they got famous at our expense.
Yeah.
And that happens sometimes. I'm sure you have a story or two about that.
Yeah, yes, definitely. Hey, the Oakland A's, we started them on that three-peat they did. You know, the Reds, we played them in the 72, and we were a far better team. But they got off to a great start, and before we knew it, it was in the seventh game, and they were able to beat us 3-2. But from that point on, they won a couple in a row after that, and we started them on the track. If we would have won that series, I think a lot of things would have been different. And I think if you'd have won that series against Portland, your team would have had a different road.
I think it would have, Joe, because we literally chased the title for the first 7 years I was in Philly, and we went to the finals three different times with two different coaches.
Right.
And if we had won that first time, because Gene Shue got fired 5 games into the second season, and so we still had a bunch of guys who really didn't know each other. We changed coaches 5 years into the second season. Doug McGinnis got traded for Bobby Jones. World Be Free got shipped out to San Diego. So our team had one shot at it.
Yeah.
And we got that close, and we never got another chance as that team.
A lot of people may not know exactly why they call you Dr. J. We, in the hood and whatever, we know that it is because of you, like you said, you operate on the court. But tell us a little bit about how you got that nickname.
Well, you know, I told you I got off the golf course today, so I played today with a friend, a dear, dear friend. His name is Leon Saunders, and we've been buddies since ninth grade, because that's when I moved to Roosevelt, and he moved to Roosevelt. And he was the guy who first called me the doctor, and I reciprocated by calling him the professor.
Okay.
And we just had these real professional-sounding nicknames. Now, I had no aspirations of wanting to be a doctor, nor he a professor. but the professor fit him so well because when we played ball or anything competitive, you know, he would always try to argue his way to the winning circle. And he was a good lecturer in that regard. And a lot of times he would win arguments. The ball could clearly go off of his knee, and he'd sit there and say, well, I got pushed. That's why it went off my knee, so it's my ball, you know? So we were out there going at it again today. I mean, we're both 61, and we've been doing this, I mean, since we were 12 or 13. And it's really one of the pleasures of my life to be around Leon and the fact that we live in the same city here, a lot of miles away from where we grew up. But that's where the doctor originated. It originated with a friend giving me the nickname, and then it evolved into Dr. J as I think when I became a professional, there was the team doctor they called Doc, the trainer they called Doc, and one other guy in the organization they called Doc. So I couldn't just be Doc. I had to be like Dr. J, and the other guy was Dr. M, and the other one was Dr. T. And the Virginia Squad started promoting me as Dr. J, sidekick to Charlie the Great Scott. And that's how they used to bill us when we were running around playing in the ABA back in 1971.
When I think of you, though, I think about you being one of the first, you know, kind of high flyers, as they call it. You know, in the NBA before was, you know, they kind of played on the floors, as we say. Mm-hmm. They were all just layups and, you know, the way they passed the ball around. You got brought an excitement, you and the other high flyers. You brought an excitement to the NBA that I think is brought the NBA to where it is today.
I would think that a lot of it was there before me. There was a resistance to change. So when Connie Hawkins would, you know, drive through the lane and pick it up with one hand and soar, and and score. You know, after being blackballed for 8 or 10 years, he get into the NBA until he was 28 or 29. So Connie and Elgin Baylor used to, you know, wow fans with moves under the basket, and he was, you know, really strong and was a scoring machine. So I just kind of looked and patterned my game after those two guys, mainly Baylor, because Baylor was getting TV time when Connie was playing for the Trotters and somewhat playing in obscurity. And that was the type of game that was really appealing to me, looking for daylight, attacking the basket, flying, you know, getting airborne and making decisions after you get airborne as opposed to making decisions before you get airborne.
Yeah.
So I probably had a little bigger stage than they did because of TV, at least color TV versus black and white TV. And then now the stage is humongous because it's an international stage, and you can go online and you can see Kobe Bryant jumping over cars on YouTube. and it's wild. But I don't know if I really want to take credit for ushering it in.
Yeah.
But I would take royalties if they were offered.
It's interesting you said that, because Wilt Chamberlain, who I befriended years, a long time ago, and he used to say, man, guys were doing this when I played. It just wasn't on TV. And you brought up Elgin Baylor and some of the great players who played back in the day who had their own style, but it wasn't on TV every night.
Yeah, Jumpin' Johnny Green, actually.
Right.
I used to walk past his house going to school. And I just admired Johnny, because Johnny was, he was left-handed, and he had the hops, and he just played hard. I mean, every time you saw him, he was just sweating and wiping his brow. He was just working hard. And I used to walk by his house, man, just, you know, always try to give a glimpse to see if he was around, because he was playing for the Knicks during that time. And when I finally met him, you know, we had a great exchange, and he got out of basketball and became very entrepreneurial, got a string of McDonald's restaurants that I used to, you know, specifically go out of my way to go to. And he was one of those guys, too, who played above the rim. And it wasn't really about slam dunking the ball. He tipped the ball in a lot. You know, balls would come off. They would throw long passes to him, and then he'd just feather it into the basket. So he was always one of my favorites, but Connie paved the way, and Elgin, I mean, clearly was the man. When I start naming my five,
don't think I'm not going to ask you that.
Hey man, I'm going to give it to you. Because it's William and Wilt.
Okay.
William is William Russell, as you know, our friend.
Yeah.
Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Oscar Robertson, Elgin Baylor. Now that's been my five.
Who can argue with that?
As long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. And it's always going to be my five. So we can have all respect to, you know, the Jordans and the Magic Johnsons and the Larry Birds and, you know, I mean, everybody who came after.
Yeah.
But that five, and I would put that five, and, you know, everybody's always arguing, well, who's going to play center, Will or Russell? They say, it don't matter. You know, I got my front court, I got my back court. You know, I just know that's my five, and I'm sticking to it.
The game, you know, it's like I tell people all the time about baseball. The game doesn't change. Only the people that play the game changes.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys and your group, the guys you mentioned, Bill Russell, you know, I've always felt that if you're a great baseball player now, you could have been a great baseball player in the past. If you're a great baseball player in the past, you could be a great player today. And I feel the same way, you know, the NBA and all the other sports, because the great players would find a way to get it done, whether it's today or in the past. They would find a way, because they're not only athletically great, but they're smart. And that's the one thing that Bill Russell always talks to me about. He says, you can't be a superstar if you're not smart.
Yeah.
Because they try to devise ways to stop you, and you have to be able to combat that.
Yeah, it's simply figuring it out. And guys who were stellar and who played for 10 years or more and who are in the Hall of Fame and who are the, you know, guys who were the great ones, they figured it out, and they did it knowing that they weren't always going to be 100%.
Right.
Because when you're a professional athlete, if something doesn't hurt you, you ain't doing it right.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, and it's amazing, because that's like, how can you, you know, how can you take that? How can you take that pain or the punishment or whatever? So we weren't designed to run and jump and dive and slide into home plate, you know, do these things that you got to do, slam your hands on a steel rim and you know, jump up in the air and elevate better than 11 feet and come down and fall on hardwood. We weren't really designed to do that. But fortunately, the great ones find a way to take their licks, lick their wounds, and then get back out there and perform.
You know the game. We've talked basketball, and you know the game so well. Did you ever think about coaching or being a head coach?
Not for one day. I mean, I coached one game when Al Bianchi got thrown out when I was a Virginia Squire, and it was my second year there. And I coached probably three quarters of the game because he got thrown out and the assistant coach got thrown out in the first quarter. And he said, "You take over." He said, "Yeah, you take over." You know, and I wasn't even the captain of the team. Fatty Taylor was the captain of the team. So you take over. I said, okay. So at the end of the game, we win by like 15 points. And, I'm kind of feeling good. 1-0. And the more I thought about it, I said, 1-0 might be a good coaching record to have, period. So I'm still 1-0, Jay. I'm still 1-0.
1-0.
Now, and I'm going to leave it that way. I'm not getting out there coaching. And it was never really, so on a serious note, it was never something that I looked at. And I always thought, with all due respect to coaches, I always thought it was in some ways glorified babysitting. And since I had my own kids to babysit, and it just, for me, I just couldn't see myself out there. And after I got out, it was sort of a relief, and I just wanted to move away from the day-to-day, having basketball in my life on a day-to-day basket basis, and I really wanted to move into developing my business acumen. I got on some boards. I got on a bank board, a hospital board, a university board, all within a year and a half period afterwards, and I got a nice taste of, how I wanted to live my life away from basketball. But it's like, sort of like being in the mob, the more you try to get out, the more they pull you in. So I think I'm always going to be associated with the game, even though coaching is not, was not meant for me.
If you have to look at one player today, you gave us your five, know, the top players all time. Who do you think is, the best players in the game today?
I think Kobe Bryant is probably the guy. Followed closely by, LeBron and Dwayne Wade. My favorite guy who's now in the twilight of his career is Tim Duncan.
Right.
What he stood for and, what he represented, I can totally relate to. I've always just enjoyed his demeanor and the fact that, he was never full of himself and just, night and night just did his job. He did it and he did it in his own way. And, Tim had the ability to dribble between his legs and behind his back and go outside and shoot jumpers, but he knew he needed to be down there manning the paint on defense and offensively staying within a, 15-foot range, using his bank shot, using his skills, and using his leadership ability to be a multiple champion and to have his years in which he was the best player in the game. So he's been my favorite guy in the last era, with this particular era. But those other guys are awesome. And then the new wave of player with Kevin Durant, coming into his own, and the Memphis Grizzlies, and what Dallas has done this year, what Chicago's doing. Yeah, I'm just sitting in a great seat to watch and enjoy it, and always compare these guys to my all-timers.
Right.
To my all-time team. And I know they're never going to catch him because I'm not going to let them catch him. But it's kind of like an interesting game to play because, I have a 10-year-old son here at home who's a big Derrick Rose fan, and Justin is everything he does is Derrick Rose would really like this. And I'm like, okay, I'll put up with that. I'll put up with your Chicago Bulls jersey, your Derrick Rose, every other thing, whatever. But you got to pay a little homage to the old school guy. And I don't even put myself in that. I put those other guys in there, making sure that he knows who they are, and that he has some appreciation for them.
Well, I put you in there with the old school guys that you talked about. One final thing. You said if you knew what you knew now, you would have been maybe a little more selfish. You know,
yeah.
And the reason, I think, Doc, is because numbers mean so much now to the public. They use these numbers. And I say the same thing. Willie Mays said to me, he said, Joe, if I knew 40-40 was going to be important, I would have stolen 40 more bases. He hit the 40 home runs, but he didn't steal the bases. And I say to you, and I've never said this to anyone else, I would have stolen more bases if I had known that it was just going to be about numbers later on.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling because when I got into the pros, and it was almost frowned upon.
Right.
You were like a scorer, and you put such a distance between you and the next guy on your team. And they said, well, you know, the teams who have the lead in scoring in the league usually don't win the championship.
Correct.
And I'm like, there was an era in which that was the thing. And then, you know, I got the best example. Will Chamberlain is really the best example. He's
right.
The best example of being somewhat enigmatic in his approach to the game because Will, and I, you know, I love Will. And Will would, the media would say, well, you could score a lot of points, but you never get any assists.
Right.
Then the next season he says, well, you know what? He's passing up shots 4 feet from the basket, passing over the corner. And he averaged like 19 or 20 assists a game.
Yeah.
Showed him that he could do that,
yeah.
You know, and something about that, and something about the way the things are portrayed, and the fact that it's a copycat league, and something are relevant in one area that are not so relevant in another area, are mind blowing. Because today they do look at those statistics, and they'll look at my statistics right now, and you know, even though I scored 30,000 points in the ABA and the NBA.
Right.
But the NBA that's out there now, they're going to say, oh, that wasn't real. That didn't really count. And the NBA, you know, my scoring total was maybe like 18,000 or 19,000 points with 11 or 12,000 coming, you know, from the ABA. So there's a lot of times when that, it doesn't even get mentioned. It's just a few NBA stats that gets mentioned, and I'm nowhere on the radar.
Yeah.
Which forms, you know, forms people's opinions, and I just try not to sweat it. Say, wait till I write my book, I'll set the story straight to where
I can't wait.
The way it really happened, and the way it really is, and let the pieces fall where they may.
The people that know the game understand that it's not just a statistical game. People know who Dr. J was, especially the people who played. Well, everybody knows you anyway because you're just world famous. So, man, I want to thank you. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart, for taking this time to talk to the people. Because, again, just hearing it from you and hearing it the way you tell it, it makes all the difference in the world. So I thank you for coming on the Joe Morgan Show.
Hey, Joe. It was an absolute pleasure talking with you. I wish you continued success with the show. And anytime you need me, I'm there for you, okay?
I know that, man, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Classic Conversations with Joe Morgan, featuring some of Joe's greatest interviews of all time. Get them all anytime at sportsusamedia.com, iTunes, the TuneIn app for your smartphone, iHeartRadio.com, and the iHeartRadio app for your smartphone. There, you can also check out some of Sports USA's other great podcasts, like Snake Steaks with Jake Plummer, The Rich Report with Tom and Sam Rich, Ted Sobel's Excellent Sports Adventure, and The Fred Dreyer Show. This is Sports USA.